When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
For the judges, and this multi-millionaire mogul now has the best kind of goal.
The Thunderbirds 144-8 for John Montgomery. It is
Thunderbird.
He wins. Canada. Montgomery takes gold
and skillet.
The Caps 720.
Oh, Tora Brunt has gone smack.
Tora Brunt is an Olympic gold medalist.
Judge scores. It's Poulin again. Canada wins gold in overtime.
Nedeljka tucks for the line. 121-12. What another recovery from the youngster. Oh! She's taken gold! She's taken gold! The world champion in parallel giant slalom snowboarding is in gold medal position here. Can you believe it?
It is Off the Podium, an Olympics podcast, coming to you today for another athlete interview. A special one today. I'm excited for this one. About a month or so ago, we wrapped up our coverage of the Youth Olympics. And 6 or so weeks ago, we sat down and spoke with Remy Harvey, the coach of the Australian 3-on-3 hockey team that headed to Gangwon, Korea for that historic tournament, the return of an Australian team at ice hockey and Olympics for the first time in over 60 years. And we touched on there with Remy about how after the Olympics, we'll get someone on, have a bit of a chat about it. And today, we're doing exactly that. Jasmine Mayer was part of that team that played in Korea. And this is a fun chat with Jasmine. Jasmine's only 14 years old. And as you will hear us say in this chat, the youngest guest we have ever had on Off the Podium. But just an incredible chat here that Jasmine goes over her experiences in Korea. She's about as obsessed with the Olympics as we are, so she fits in very well with this show. Goes through her journey right through from a bit of a late switch to ice hockey, I want to say. She's only really been playing ice hockey for about 18 months, nearly 2 years, coming from an inline hockey background. So making that transition, learning what that was like, the process of getting selected for the Youth Olympics, and just how life has been since. As an Olympian, she absolutely relishes the chance. Everything that happened in the village, we hear about the food hall in a Youth Olympics village. I think it's the first time we've ever really learnt a little bit more about that. The pin trading and everything else around that. And we find out about Jasmine's spirit animal. If you remember our chat with Remy a few weeks ago, and she was talking about the spirit animals that she had her team assign themselves going into the games, we find out what Jasmine's is, and it's a great answer. You will appreciate it. So sit back, relax, and listen to our chat with Australian ice hockey player Jasmine Mayer. Just over a month ago, we wrapped up our coverage of the Youth Olympics from Korea. I got very, very excited to cover our first ever Youth Olympics in full. And just before those Olympics, of course, we had Remy Harvey on the show to talk about the historic 3x3 hockey team that went to Korea. The first time Australia has had a team in ice hockey in more than 60 years at an Olympic Games. And I'm so excited today to be able to be joined by one of those players from that team that created that history in Korea. And it's a pleasure to learn about her experiences as well as her time in the sport, Jasmine Mayer. Jasmine, first of all, welcome Off the Podium. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I want to say you are creating history today and Off the Podium. You are officially the youngest guest we have ever had on this show. So first of all, congratulations for creating history today. I'm sure that you can put that on your resume now, Olympian and youngest ever guest on Off the Podium. But we're obviously recording this only a couple of weeks after you've sort of come back from Korea. I just kind of want to start by straight away. How's the last couple of weeks been coming back from Korea, having experienced a Youth Olympics?
Bit busy. It's still a bit surreal because as much as I've left Korea, the Olympics is still kind of with me in a way that I still have all the memories and the aftermath of it, such as interviews like this all going on, that it carries on from Korea. It doesn't end there. It just keeps on going.
I like that. I like hearing that. And I can imagine this is one of these things that, like, you get home, you've got this cool, like, kit, you know, you've got the Olympic rings, you've got all this sort of stuff. I mean, do you just never want to take it off? I can't imagine that that's something you just kind of, like, going, like, ah, I don't care how smelly this is going to get. I never want to remove it.
Well, I was very adamant to keep it on whilst I was over there, wore it in my room 24/7 and everything, and I very much would like to do the same here.
Are you allowed to wear it to school? Are you allowed to, like, you know, go to the teachers, like, ah, I don't have to wear a uniform today, I can wear my Olympic clothes?
I wish. I still have to wear a school uniform.
Ah, damn. Maybe do they still have, like, you know, casual Fridays or, like, once a month, like a free dress day or something like that? You can maybe wear it on one of those days?
Maybe once every 2 months.
Yeah. Hey, you know, why not? I'm sure you can show that off there. But again, we're obviously very passionate about the Olympics on this show, Jasmine. So we always love hearing that you kind of, it's sort of sticking with you and everything, because it's, I always have this question that I ask our guests, like, growing up, did you ever have aspirations to be an Olympian or things like that? I mean, you're only 14, you're still growing up and you've achieved an Olympic. So I can't even ask that question today, but I guess before you were 14, when you were sort of younger, were there sort of, were you watching the Olympics? Did you sort of watch these and go, like, hey, that would be cool to be able to achieve or go to an Olympics one day?
I always watched the Olympics when I was younger. I used to get excited. I remember I made a few cakes, actually, one time for it. I got really excited. And I never thought that only in, like, a few years' time I'd be on the other side of it.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it. The opportunity just came out of the blue, and I decided that I wanted to take it and try my best and get there.
What? Tell me about these cakes. I'm intrigued now. What are you making? What's an Olympic cake that you make?
Just a cake decorated with the Olympic rings and a few sports on it.
Nice. And is this winter, summer, a bit of both? Like, you kind of change it up every couple of years?
Yeah, a bit of both.
Bit of both.
Every once in a while.
Yeah, okay. This is where you can really make me feel old right now by answering this question. What was the first Olympics you remembered watching?
Ooh, probably when I was maybe 5, 6, somewhere around that time.
Okay, so that, when I'm thinking, like, Rio, so like 2016-ish?
Yeah.
Around then?
That time. 2016. That's the first one I can remember.
Not too bad then. Okay, I was thinking if you started with, like, Tokyo or something like that, like, it'd be, you know, quite awkward with that sort of stuff. But I guess just in terms of your career so far in hockey, you started in inline hockey. What sort of drew you into getting involved in inline hockey?
Well, my mother took me and my brother rollerblading once, just down at the local rink. I really enjoyed it. And then they said, oh, why don't you come and try inline hockey? Tried it, and I've stuck with it.
Simple. Easy. Yeah. Were you sort of, or are you still active in sort of other sports, or was it kind of you discovered inline hockey and, like, this is it, this is the only sport I kind of want to be involved in?
I've done dancing before, but sadly inline had to take the stage on that one, kind of push it away because I needed more time to, like, do inline.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did netball recently. But sadly, ice hockey did the same thing, made it have to sit in the corner a bit.
took over a little bit, which your switch to ice hockey was only fairly recently, within the last sort of 2 years. So I know, kind of, in dealing, you know, I mentioned to you off air, originally from Tasmania, I had a bit to do with ice hockey down there, but I know obviously they're very connected with the inline community there as well. Was it a case of just getting recruited? Did you happen to go along and watch some ice hockey one time? How did you sort of make that switch over to the ice?
I decided after one of my inline tournaments that I wanted to go further and just get better, because I had some of my teammates kind of taking over a bit, kicking me down, kind of putting me in my place a bit. And I decided that I wanted to just get better at inline. And I heard that ice hockey was really good and the coaching was great, and decided to just try that out.
Had you been exposed to ice hockey at all, like, in terms of maybe watching it at the Olympics, seeing some NHL? I mean, kind of, were you, you know, familiar with the sport as such?
Well, I'd watched the Olympics with it, and, of course, had to watch all the ice hockey games. I was an inliner. I just needed to. And then I went and watched one of my coaches do a Melbourne Ice game, mm-hmm. Ash, and then next thing you know, I'm doing ice hockey a few years later.
Was there much of a, like, when it comes to transitioning outside of the obvious of you go from rollerblades to ice skates? Like, I mean, did you find that transition to skating on ice tricky? Like, was there much you kind of need to adapt to once you made that switch?
Very tricky. I skated differently to others. I couldn't stop right on a couple of my like edges. I remember my first ice training session I went, we had the little under nines playing with us at the same time. And we were just playing like a puck game where you had to skate around with the puck and like keep it away from others. And I remember falling over and having one of the little kids who looked like he was like 5 come up to me and pat me on the head and take my puck away.
Wow, welcome to ice hockey.
Yeah, that was my first ever ice hockey interaction. It was great.
Now I feel like some revenge now would be to find that same kid with the Olympic uniform and pat him on the head and be like, where are you at right now?
Oh, no, I'll be nice. He's a pretty nice kid.
All right, okay. Just, you know, don't take our advice. That's fine. Which, I mean, because it's obviously a much faster game, bit more physical, I'm guessing, as well, in terms of, I mean, what's your mum, what's your parents thinking, like, all of a sudden you're kind of like, I want ice hockey. And they might have this vision of sort of seeing it on TV and kind of, you know, the rough and tumble that is ice hockey.
Well, my mother actually was the one to bring up ice hockey to me and said, why don't you try this out? And I've always been pretty physical when it comes to inline, so I think my mother and father are kind of just like, she can handle it. She's got this.
Why not? Which, because it's also like, is it a case of like when you're sort of talking to your friends at school and you're sort of explaining that you're going ice hockey? Because again, it's not, you know, the number one sport in Australia. It's obviously a bit of a fringe sport. But what are sort of people thinking when you're all of a sudden like, hey, I'm ice hockey. Let's you know, come watch me down at the rink.
Well, they always ask me, have you ever gone to fights? So the stereotypes for ice hockey are pretty strong from where I come from.
Yep.
But I guess I normally shock people when I say I play with boys. They always get very shocked by that. But I think that the NHL has kind of like brainwashed everyone to have it. But, you know,
it's
a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point with that. And I also think, too, given that, like, I mean, I really got into the sport, again, to show my age, is obviously like with the movie The Mighty Ducks when that came out. You know, I was of that age where that kind of got me into the sport. But I mean, do you kind of like when you get into it, do you watch something like The Mighty Ducks? Is that kind of something that, you know, you can sort of pick up and almost have a bit of a laugh at now, given that it's a bit of an old movie now, you know, compared to when I was your age? Obviously, it was a fairly new movie.
I think I can just barely remember watching The Mighty Ducks when I first started inline. I don't think I've watched it since. I actually don't watch NHL. I more love playing the sport rather than watching it.
Yep. Yeah. Which also then sort of the local scene, you touch on the Melbourne Ice, and obviously I know you're obviously involved in the Melbourne Ice and the women's side of that too. How have you found sort of playing along with sort of those girls? Obviously a few of them are probably quite a bit older than you too, Jasmine, but I mean, does that sort of help, say, compared to like when you're playing with the boys instead, like you can play up, look up to these girls a little bit more, and obviously with that side of things, it's expanding a lot more in the country.
Well, yeah, I look up to those girls a lot because ice hockey can get rough, but those girls are even rougher.
Mm.
They are just as physical as the boys, go just as hard as much, and it's a privilege to get to play with them too.
Which also, I should add, I mean, I often sometimes will, you know, decide what I'm going to wear for one of these interviews, Jasmine. I try to like team it with the theme a little bit, you know, like if I'm interviewing someone from ice hockey, I've got plenty of ice hockey clothes. I was going to wear my Melbourne Mustangs jersey, but I thought that might be a little bit offensive on this interview. So I didn't want to start off on a bad foot there. So, you know, I know the rivalry
We're good.
All right. Okay. You know, just I'll sort of bring that up. So I guess when you make that transition to ice, and then in less than 2 years, you're obviously on a plane to a Youth Olympics to represent Australia. I mean, could you have imagined sort of a quick transition to adapt to that so quickly that you would be up for selection for a Youth Olympics team?
I didn't think I was old enough for Youth Olympics, some part of me. I didn't think that ice hockey, like Australia, would be an ice hockey team in the Youth Olympics. So I guess it never really crossed my mind. So that I just need to adapt quickly. And it kind of went from being, you know, oh, we're just doing club games try your hardest to being. Every game needs to be as hard as possible. Every training, you need to do your hardest and listen like as best as you can. You need to go for the second effort and do stuff outside of that. Take skating sessions. That's what I did to get better with my edge work, because of course, mm-hmm. I'm an inliner, not that good of a skater. So it happened quickly, and it happened so quickly that I didn't almost have time to adapt. I was still adapting when I got over there, but then I realized it was more about just having fun and enjoying it. So,
how quickly are you then sort of on the radar, I guess, of, you know, Ice Hockey Australia, the Olympic team? Because I know you've obviously, you represented, went to the USA in inline hockey for that side of things. But is it just a case of you're adapting, you're doing well, and then sort of people are sort of keeping an eye on you, and that you know you're sort of, I guess, on the cusp of making an Australian team?
Well, I didn't know that they were watching me until I got invited to the camp.
Really? So wow.
It definitely wasn't. Yeah. I just got the invite and then found out that it was, well, for the Youth Olympics. So it almost flicked to my mind that people are watching me, and it's made me way more aware. I know that every single game is being watched by different people who are like a part of different teams who could get me to do different tournaments and different games. And it's every single game is almost a tryout in a way.
Which I guess, I mean, not knowing that you were being watched by scouts, and you sort of touched on it being fun, has it kind of changed now, being aware that people maybe are watching you? Because I guess back then you're probably playing with a bit more freedom, right, until you get that letter going like, hey, come on in and try for this. I mean, do you feel that's changed it a little bit mentally, knowing that there are people constantly watching you for that?
Maybe I just take it a bit more seriously in a way that I'm just a bit more, as I said, aware, but I don't think it's really changed my attitude or how hard I try, because I try my hardest in every game. So I think it didn't really, because, well, if they were watching me when I didn't know that they were watching me and I still got picked for this, then it means I was doing the right thing all along.
Exactly. Great way of looking at it. So you get to that camp, you obviously know what's on the line. What was that sort of experience like, to be kind of be with a bunch of girls and knowing what's on the line, a potential appearance at a Winter Youth Olympics?
I still couldn't believe it. I thought that some part of it was all just one giant joke, and it was really fun. But at everything I did, every single step I took on the ice, every single puck I shot, I had it in the back of my mind, just Olympics, Olympics. It was my motivation the whole entire time that I was in the camp.
I like that. I like that, constantly thinking of that. And in terms of sort of the style of play, obviously the 3x3, the 3-on-3, the 3, whatever you officially call it, like, was that something that you had played a lot of? I mean, kind of was a lot of skills sort of being tested around that in the camp to kind of see how you would adapt to that form of play versus the 5-on-5 style that you no doubt would have been used to?
We did a lot of 3-on-3 at the camp, yes, which was practicing getting on and off the gate, because of course you've only got one gate to let players on and off at the same time. The 45-second shifts, and you can't touch the puck after the buzzer's gone. The shape that you need to be in, the formation of players, we practiced all of that at the camp. But for me, I felt like it came a bit more naturally, because as an inliner, you only have 4 players. Mm. And if you have a penalty, then you're down to 3. So in my mind, it was more just playing a penalty kill.
Was there a lot of that? Like, were there other sort of girls at the camp who were also coming from that inline background, sort of in similar positions to you and sort of fairly newish to ice over inline?
There was a mixture. There were girls who played inline and have been playing ice for ages. Girls like me that play inline and haven't been playing ice for that long, but made the switch to ice recently. And then there were girls that have never heard of inline, which was a bit weird.
Wow. So they never even heard of it. They haven't even, ever tried it.
No.
Wow. Just purely born on the ice. Wow. Were they ex-Canadians, were they? Just like straight onto the ice? Or
Yeah, there was a few Canadians that they have been skating since they were just born, yeah. I swear.
Born with skates on their feet, basically.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. Which, I mean, that makes it, I guess, all the more unique when you're sort of trying that, because you're meeting new people, you're adapting to it. I mean, a lot of these girls obviously go on to be your teammates. So I guess it's kind of, that's part of the learning experience, and I'm sure what the scouts and the coaches are looking at, seeing how you adapt to the play, but also with different players and kind of how that's going to translate onto the ice, right?
Yeah. Well, for me, lots of the players that I went there with from my state that I knew of are players that I actually really admired and thought, I want to be like them. I want to play like them. I want to go as hard as them, when I was just playing against them in my club games. And next thing you know, I'm trying out for the same team as them. It was very just mind-blowing.
You touched on that. You know, you go into that with Olympics on the mind. You're thinking Olympics, Olympics, Olympics. When you got that nod, when they said, Jasmine, you're going to Korea. I mean, do you remember what that feeling was like, and how you took that news?
I started crying, actually. I was very, very excited because I'd put lots of time and effort into learning how to skate better, into learning how to shoot better. I'd just put lots of time. I'd gone on camps. I'd done a lot, and to just have that relief of knowing that it all was worth it. It made me cry. I was so happy. And then it was just surreal for the rest of the day. I was walking on air.
And it's all still on the mind, as you said. I mean, was your mum there? Were your family there? Or was it straight onto the phone to be like, yeah, I'm going to the Olympics?
We actually weren't allowed to tell our family members until we posted. So it was just my mother who had gotten the message.
Right.
That day. So she got to tell me, which was really special.
Wow.
Coming home from school and her just pulling me out of the car and being like, you got in. It was cool.
Which I'm guessing surely that night, like, go out for a nice dinner, you know, like maybe get some Maccas or something like that. You get a bit of a special dinner that night, surely.
Yeah, celebratory dinner, of course.
Yeah, you'd be a bit angry at mum if you didn't, right? Like, kind of doing that. So this is obviously like, and I know the squad was sort of announced last year, like sort of November, and obviously one of the first, if not the first sort of athletes announced for the game. So, I mean, does that make Christmas, like, you're always waiting for Christmas, right? That's the thing everybody's waiting for at the end of the year. But for you, it's probably like, yeah, Christmas, but I mean, come on, bring on like the end of January. I want to be on a plane already. Like, is it distracting?
Oh, that was exactly it. Yeah. I was like, Christmas? No, no, no. Korea? Yes. Come
on. Like, great presents, Mum. I'm so glad you got me this. But seriously, like, why am I not on the plane already? Which, and also, I guess, in terms of the training aspect as well, I mean, are you amping up your ice time, sort of honing your skills a lot more? Kind of like, was it a case of after you celebrated, I'm going to the Olympics, back to the job at hand? I've got a job to do now.
It was exactly that. Once I got in, it was like, woohoo, let's go. And then it was straight back to training. And then I needed to try even harder. I needed to get even better. I needed to be at my best for the Olympics. I spent nearly every single week between getting the news that I was in and Korea. I spent majority of my days of the week just at an ice rink, whether it was skating, shooting pucks, training, watching the Melbourne Ice girls play. I just spent every single minute around an ice rink. So then I was just at my peak for the Olympics.
Is it a case of two when you say can't get ice time, do you sort of have like a makeshift net set up in the backyard or something like that with a stick to kind of do things like that to practice as well?
Yeah, I got a bucket and I got a little bit of inline rink, so that it was similar to ice, and I used to shoot the puck into the bucket, or I have a balance board that I'd be on, so I do some puck handling whilst on the balance board. So even when I wasn't at a rink, I was mentally at a rink at home training still.
Always at a rink. I like that. What was that moment like then when you finally got to get on that plane, get to Korea? I mean, all the little things that come with an Olympics, your uniform, you're getting your accreditation, you're checking into your accommodation, all the little bits outside of the competition. How did you find all of that?
It all went so fast that I wish I could replay it again, just over and over, relive it. Getting my uniform was awesome. Went home, did a photo shoot and everything.
Nice.
But then had family members come over and see it. And then getting on the plane was very emotional because it was like, oh my God, it's finally here. It's happening. Getting to the village was awesome because we got to look around. It was not awesome that it was like 3 o'clock in the morning and it was freezing cold.
Bit of a change, right, from summer in Australia to going to freezing cold in Korea, no doubt.
Yeah, all of us were sitting on the plane with trackies on that we needed to wear whilst we were over there, just sweating, being like, oh my God. And then the second we got off in Korea, we were like, oh my God, it's so cold. Put the jackets on, put the jackets on.
Which, I mean, it must be just that unique feeling of the buzz and the excitement and everything, but then obviously that sort of shock hit you. What, like, how far away did you arrive? Was this sort of like a day or two, like, before the opening ceremony? Had you arrived like a week before? Sort of like, how much time did you have to adapt to those conditions?
I believe we got there. We had 5 days of the tournament, opening ceremony. We got there nearly a week early.
Right. Okay.
So we had a lot of time to go around and see the village and talk to other countries. And then we had the under 18 girls who played over in Spain.
Mm.
They arrived the next day. So then we kind of gave them a tour and showed them everything. And then we had another day to just really soak everything in and have that Olympic experience as an athlete in the way of living in an Olympic village with a bunch of other countries and eating all the food there. And then seeing the, like, Korea, because of course it's a new country. And then we had our training days, which were even more awesome because when you walked around the hockey center, there'd just be people in all these different uniforms coming out from different change rooms and flags strung up everywhere. And every day was just different in a way.
I love hearing that. And it's particularly too because, I mean, the Youth Olympics, such a unique experience too, where you're around pretty much, I'm sure everybody's feeling the same as you, of course, here, Jasmine, just being completely in awe. And also, like, when you're bumping shoulders, no doubt, with other countries, which are similar to Australia, where, like, winter's obviously a bit of a new thing to them as well. So kind of having all this sort of stuff. And it's just, I love sort of hearing that. Can you take us through the food hall at a Youth Olympics? Because it's not something that we really touch on too much on this show when we're sort of talking to people outside of sort of going to the, you know, I guess we say regular Olympics outside of a Youth Olympics. But, I mean, is it sort of a lot more regulated given that you're sort of younger, or is it kind of like free for all? There's, like, you know, your great takeaway, your great career. And, like, I mean, kind of what's a food hall like at a Youth Olympic village?
It was just food everywhere, different types of food from different types of countries. And there were different meals at different times of the day. And you just went in there and there was a bunch of other countries. And because we're all wearing our uniforms, it was just a sea of colors. And everyone was just there getting food. And you'd see people from different countries with, like, particular, like, foods on their plate. And then you could, like, you just got to analyze other people's culture food-wise as well.
Yeah.
And for the first couple of days, everyone sat with their own countries. But by the end of it, people were starting to mingle and you'd just see, like, different colors all together rather than all separated. It was awesome.
Fantastic. And is it a case of, we always like talking about this question, like, when do you try and guess where, like, what, not necessarily where they're from, but, like, what they're doing? Like, oh, you're a ski jumper, or, you know, you're a curler. Like, are you trying to sort of early on guess what each athlete is doing as a sport?
Yeah, definitely some of that. You'd sit down in the dining hall and you turn to your friends and you're a bit like, I reckon that they might be a curler, as you said, or they might be biathlon, and you had a bit of that. And then it was funny to go onto the TV and then be like, yeah, I got it correct.
Yes, point for me. And pin trading, was that a big deal?
It was not only a big deal, it was a huge deal. You have people coming into the elevators being like, pin, pin, pin.
Wow.
Just like trying to trade pins with you is everywhere. I had a whole entire lanyard just filled with pins by the end of it.
What was your favorite? What was the favorite one that you ended up with?
Ooh, probably the Canadian one.
Okay.
I like that one.
Nice. All right. And you obviously you get designated a certain amount, like the AOC obviously give you a bunch to trade, but I'm sure you keep a few, right? Like you want some for yourself, give to the family. You know, he's a cool Australian pins that we had as well.
Yeah, did some of that. They gave us pins for us to keep ourselves and then a little packet for us to trade off. I got an extra pin that I gave to one of my family members with me by doing a one-handed push-up. That was pretty good.
Wow. You've always got to like go that extra mile, right, sometimes to get the ones there. I like that. I like that. Very smart. The tournament itself, now we were glued to it during it because like, you know, it was sort of it came down to the fact that we have a team for Australia like coming into the Olympics, as I said, at the top for the first time in more than 60 years. But just particularly the way you guys started off, obviously with a handy 6-1 win over the Dutch. It was like, oh, here we go. This is on. Like, we're here to show the world what we're at. I mean, take us through that first game because you get a bit of an injury in that game, Jasmine. So tell us what happened with there, but what was that experience like to start things off with a win?
Oh, it was amazing. Going into the change room, everyone just, it was, you'd walk through the hallway and everyone's pretty silent and each other alone. You'd say good job to each other, other countries that were going past to go to different change rooms, you'd fist bump with them. And then you step into the change room and everyone just starts screaming and cheering and hugging each other and throwing water at each other and just having an absolute ball, because to start a tournament, especially the Youth Olympics, off with a win, it was incredible. And we have our team song that we do, we all sing.
Which is,
So
can you tell us what your team song is?
Love Story by Taylor Swift.
Ah, it's got to say, it's got to
Yeah.
be a I know Remy sort of mentioned when we were talking a little bit about the songs that Taylor was on the agenda there, so
Oh, always on the agenda.
bumped out. I mean, do you have tickets? Are you seeing her like at you know in a couple of weeks or
No.
no?
I reckon gotta focus back on school, I reckon
Oh, okay. All
now.
right. I was going to say it wasn't a perk of the job. Like, you know, you didn't come back as this, you know, youth Olympian and you just get free tickets to Tay Tay at all. So, no, not quite.
No.
No, can't flash that. But, I mean, yourself, so you're injured your hand. So tell us what happened with that.
Oh, I just one of the other players on the Netherlands team, whilst we were just having a bit of like a tussle on the boards, just hit my hand a bit awkwardly. So coming off the physio, Steph, she told me to take it easy and stuff, and she wanted to look at it after the game because I was fine. But that kind of ball went out the window when Tay Tay started playing.
She heals all wounds, apparently. Which I mean, what's going through your mind when you go? I mean, it's the first game. You've gone through all of this like lead up, and you're excited. You're there, and then you sort of get like hurt. I'm sure you're probably going like, "Nah, I'm fine. Like, put me on, put me on. Like, I'm good. Give me the Tay Tay. Get me some pumped up. Like, I want to get back on the ice, coach. Come on, Remy, put me on."
I've always had that mentality of if you get a little hurt, like, you know, and you get a bit of a bruise, it's a bruise, it heals, but you'll never have that opportunity again. And that's why I just went, oh, it's just an injury. You can keep on going. It's just a tiny bit, because I knew that in the long run, if I was to make a big deal out of it and be like, oh no, it's injured, I need to leave, I was going to miss an amazing opportunity. So to keep going
And
in a way.
it's a really great point you make with that because you really won't have another because like you can basically only go to one Youth Olympics like because you will basically be too old come
Sadly,
2028.
yeah.
So that's kind of like it really is kind of a this is it. This is the one time you'll get to go to a Youth Olympics. So I love that mentality. What I mean, was that mood after that win? Because I know we talked to Remy a little bit about like how do you scope the opposition? Like, kind of, you know, it's sort of a newer form of hockey. Obviously, you know, maybe you're aware of who the team's to beat and everything along those lines. But I mean, you beat the Dutch. We talked a lot on this show about Dutch and skates generally is a good combination. So go Australia. We beat the Dutch on skates. We're going to take that. Do you then sort of look ahead and go, ah, South Korea, easy. You know, we beat the Dutch. We can keep going. Or was there a little bit more to it going like, oh, this might be a bit more of a difficult game?
We had a saying in the change room and it was called goldfish mentality. So, yes, we got a win, or yes, we lost this game, but you put it behind you and you focus on the next game. So if you took a terrible loss, you stuffed up in a game, you let it boil in your belly for a minute. You kind of get a little bit angry about it. That's good. Self-reflecting is good. But then you forget about it and you go into the next game just as hyped as you were for the last. Treat it like you just came off from a giant win. You just need to be happy and ready to go and focused for each game.
I like that mentality because obviously that win against the Dutch is on one day, but then your next two games are in the same day. So you have the Korea game and then you got to back that up. What about like 6-7 hours later when you're up against Italy? So is it almost a case of putting that result from South Korea, as you're saying, that mentality and using that as a bit of momentum, like to try and go into the next game, given you've already played that day, if that makes sense?
It was a bit like that, yes. It was, oh, sadly, we lost. Oh, well, let's win the next one. We've got the next one. Tara, our captain, was amazing in the change rooms before the games. She'll come up and be like, are you ready, and hype us up a bit. It was all just about trying to get everyone to be in the mood for an amazing game. Because, of course, if you're thinking about a loss, then you're going to have another loss. You're just upset. You're sluggish. You're not focused. Whilst if you're hyped up and you're pumped and you're confident in the way you play, you're going to have an amazing game.
What can you do in that period? Once the final whistle goes against that game against South Korea and you know you've got a couple of hours to prep for the next one, is it a case of what you're saying, kind of staying in that zone, maybe go get a quick bite to eat? Or do you really kind of still need to stick around the rink, do a bit of couple of drills or something to sort of remain ice ready? Like, what do you do in that couple of hours before the next game?
We would do cool down, of course, and then we'll go back and we'll get lunch. Get carbs in, get ready for the next game, have fuel for the next game. And then we'll do recovery. We also analyzed our last game and would show things that we're good at and we did well and that we need to bring into the next game, or things that we need to improve on as well. So then we were ready and prepared for the next game.
The next game against Italy, you get a bit of a knock, I believe. Get some concussion that ruled you out for the rest of the tournament, sadly. Again, tell us what happened. Do you remember it, Jasmine? If I'm asking you this, like, was a concussion that bad that you don't remember kind of what happened? What happened against Italy?
Well, the game was going awesome. Of course, we were doing really well. Italy is a very fierce team, very physical team, but so is Australia. It was great. Then I got a little bit of a head injury, sadly. I can remember it, yes, but almost like a stop, like motion video, kind of like snippets of it. It's a bit amusing to play back in my head because it's like, oh, I've got the puck, I can shoot it. Wait, there's someone at my feet. Oh, wait, I'm in the boards. Oh, no.
And scene. That's the tournament, which, I mean, obviously, you know, similar question to what I said about the first game when you get that injury. To be ruled out, like, I mean, concussion's obviously such a, you know, finicky injury. You always obviously want to play it safe with everything along those lines. And obviously for you to not play the rest of the tournament was done, no doubt, with your own safety and future in mind. But do you have moments where you're like, eh, what are you talking about? I'm fine. Like, put me on against Hungary. Like, I mean, going against sort of that and thinking, like, what are you talking about? I don't need to miss the rest of this tournament.
That was 110% my mentality there. I actually remember sitting on the bench and I had the physio who was there with me, Steph, absolutely lovely. She was telling me about how I was like, oh, no, I'm fine. Let me back on. And I was acting weird. My eyes were acting weird. I was looking up at the lights on the ceiling and be like, oh, no, way too bright, and coming back down and then being like, I'm fine, put me back on. And then the period ended, and mind you, I had my injury in the second period. I was like, oh, can I at least go and shake hands with everyone now? I'd totally forgotten which period it was. So
that's where they're probably going, yeah, Jasmine, you're not okay.
That's exactly that. I think that was exactly what she said. I'd be like, I'm okay, I'm fine. And she was like, Jasmine, You're not okay.
Yep. You know you're in Korea. It's only period two. You know, not quite there. So was it sort of a case where you monitored for the rest of the tournament? Was there any sort of chance or hope that you might be able to play again?
No, sadly, that we went back. Of course, I got taken off, like fully off the rink, returned back to the change rooms in a very ungraceful way, mind you. I was carried by the arms. But we did a concussion test down in the change rooms, and then I was stressing because I was like, no, there's no way that I'm going to get told I can't play in any more games. That's not it. No. But of course, I was still scared, but it was almost that thing of like, there's no way. It's not going to happen. And then to wake up, and I felt perfectly normal in the moment, looking back now. I was not normal. I admit that. I was acting weird. I still had a headache. I was not thinking straight. But I remember going to the medical room. I had the physios. They were lovely. They, the night that it happened, were with me the whole entire time, walked me from the rink to the bus, and then from the bus to my room, made sure I was okay. They did another concussion test once I was back at the village. And then in the morning, they came and fetched me. They were absolutely amazing. And of course, wanted to make sure I was okay. And then I did another concussion test. I remember going through all the symptoms and being like, nah, I'm normal. And just being like, I don't think I have any of these. And then next thing you know, Danielle, the doctor, turns to me and is like, yeah, you're concussed. And looking back now, it was probably very funny now in a way, because like I was not okay. I felt perfectly normal, but I was not okay. But it was pretty devastating to be told that sadly my Olympic journey had to be cut off short. And I, with all the games I play, from inline to ice, all the tournaments I play, whether it's just a simple home game or state level stuff or now Olympic stuff, I always had that thing of just keep pushing through. And to be told that, no, you're not allowed to. It was almost, I couldn't get it right in my head. It didn't click right in my head, because I normally made the decision of whether I was okay enough to play, but to have someone else make the decision for me was just a bit shocking and very upsetting. But then after having a bit of a moment, bit of tears shared, I was straight back into it. I was like, I may have finished my games and I can't be on the ice, but I'm going to try my best to be next to the ice, to be in the change room with the team, to be cheerful, to just do everything with them, because although I may not be playing anymore, I'm still a teammate to a bunch of like other people, and I need to be there for them and be a teammate.
I guess it kind of, yeah, gives you a bit of a taste of the other side of the bench. I mean, obviously Remy talked a lot about sort of transitioning from playing into coaching, and obviously she's still doing both, but sort of the coaching side of things, but like also just being a cheerleader, I guess, and kind of supporting it. Cause obviously a couple of tricky losses that came with that. But I can imagine that it was just, your role becomes completely different at that point, doesn't it?
It very much did. And that's exactly how I treated in my head. Instead of thinking, oh, you're an athlete, but you've been benched, kind of, like, you know, I'm back on the ice. I went, I'm an athlete, I'm on the bench, but I'm on the bench. I got to cheer. I got to scream my head
you're the
off.
Best seat in the house. You haven't paid for that? Like, great.
Exactly.
Front row.
I got to be really close to the ice. I just cheered my team on, and we had our little mascot, okay. Billy and Lucy. It's a little kangaroo.
Right, okay.
I brought her onto the bench with me, and we had the whole entire cheer team. We had our team manager, the physios, everyone on the bench, all just cheering the whole entire time.
Great.
And as much as I was off the ice, I still felt that like nervous level. I still felt nervous if the opposition got too close to our net or got really excited if like we took a shot and it nearly goes in. It was, as much as I wasn't the one playing, I felt like I still was in a way.
Well, that's what you want, right? Like if you can't be out there in the ice and you got mascots there and you got everything going on. I mean, what were you like in the game against Mexico? Like, I mean, were you just absolutely, you know, losing it at how tight and everything that turned out to get then the second win for Team Australia?
Oh yeah, I was almost on the ice, I think, at one point. Had to have Lockie be like, Jazz, let's just be a bit careful. Step back. I was screaming so much. And I remember at the end of the game, all my teammates were all in front of the net and cheering their heads off, hugging our goalies, just being so excited. Of course, it's a win at the Youth Olympic Games. That's absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
And I remember having a few of my teammates actually come up to me and give me a fist bump and a hug and everything, even though there was netting between us. So it was awesome to still be included in the win, because although I wasn't playing, I still contributed. I still helped to get to that point.
The one that we talked a little bit about was the game against Hungary. First of all, we didn't know Hungary were so amazing at ice hockey. Good for them, like obviously going in to win the goal. But, you know, on paper you see 22-1 and you think, not a good game. But I see that one, Jasmine, as a positive, because I think at that point Australia were only the second team to put a goal past the Hungarians. I actually saw the footage of that goal and how excited you were, like the team was, for scoring that goal. I mean, in such a dominant side to get a goal. I mean, because there were plenty of teams. I mean, look at the Dutch. 33-0. Yeah. Come on. Like, we got at least a goal against the Hungarians. That's got to be a win.
We definitely counted it as a win. And we also, like, I like to look at it as, it's not about the scoreboard as much as it's on the play. Even though they may be getting more shots against us, and sure, 22-1. We played an amazing game on the ice and we gave them hell. And I think that one goal counts for everything.
I love that attitude. I just want to replay that answer basically for every guest on this show forward right now, if there's any ever disappointment. Like, look at this attitude, right? 22-1, whatever. Like, we put it up to them. We got a goal. Like, come on, you know. Were you aware that Hungary was the team to beat? Or was that sort of once you got there and you saw how good they were, oh, there we go, Hungary, they're pretty good.
We were very much aware. And I remember everyone being like, all right, we've played against Netherlands. We got to win. Let's focus on Hungary. Now, that will be a tough game, because Remy had told us about how much of a hockey nation they'd become recently and how much effort they put into their younger girls and making them a stronger team. And I admire them for that. That's amazing to go from being a pretty weak team. Australia, we used to kick their butts.
Yeah.
To being an amazing hockey nation that... It was almost a privilege to play against them. It really was, to play against such a strong team like that. And we were very much aware going into the games that they were the team to beat. And it was almost exciting to play the team to beat.
I love hearing that, though, because, like, yeah, if you had asked me to predict who's going to win a gold medal, I'm looking at Hungary. And it's interesting you say they're becoming a hockey nation, because I've never attributed Hungary as a hockey nation. But here we are. Look at that. And they romped to gold. I mean, it didn't even seem like they outside of the one goal that we got against them, of course, you know, were overly challenged. So I like that. I mean, that must also boost Australia's confidence a little bit in a way. A, as you said, we used to beat them all the time, but B, that there are these countries out there that maybe aren't considered traditional hockey nations, but are turning into them. And that can help someone like Australia in the future, where we might be able to become Hungary at the next Winter Youth Olympics.
I like to think of it like that, that if any country can just, if they put effort into the sport and they train the girls and they give them ice time, that we could be like Hungary one day. And I think it would be pretty funny for people to be like, Australia, the giant desert with all the kangaroos and emus, they're a hockey nation.
Some would say it makes you hungry for success. Right?
Definitely. Yep.
Thank you. I'm here all week. A couple of things, Jasmine, before we let you go. I mean, now that you're back, obviously, you know, sort of still buzzing as we touched on it at the beginning there. What sort of next for you in your journey? You've had this taste of the green and gold. You've had this taste of international. You hope to sort of keep growing that with your ice hockey and then ultimately end up on sort of, I think, as Remy said, they're now called the Flyers, aren't they? Not the Mighty Jills. So, like, kind of making it up the ranks of the Australian ice hockey to make that team and go to world championships and other things like that?
Just take every opportunity I get and run with it. if I get invited to try out for a team, try my best to get in. I really want to get into the under-18 side of it. Those girls are absolutely lovely. And, of course, I've played with a couple of them, and I would love to get into that. So I think that's the next step, along with getting into the team of Melbourne Ice as well and getting to actually play those games. I think that's my next steps in my hockey career, those two, I reckon.
How close are we to putting on the Melbourne Ice jersey and sort of suiting up in an AIWHL game?
I don't know, but I'd like to hope that it's not too far away, and I'm looking forward to finally being able to put on that jersey with my, like, with May on the back and my number and getting to play alongside those girls. It's really special for me because I actually have a cap in my room that's got all of their signatures on it.
Oh, wow.
From when I went and watched them. So it's amazing going from being a fan and getting signatures from them to be able to train alongside them. And I just can't wait for the day that I get to play alongside them.
So close. I mean, and the Ice House is such a great facility too. So, I mean, like, you know, that must be pretty special to be able to go out there and kind of train amongst, you know, in those facilities, of course.
Oh, yes. It's amazing. That ice, the ice there is beautiful. You can go to different places and you'll be like, ah, the ice is too wet, or the ice is too dry, or it's too bumpy, but the facilities there are amazing. The change rooms are amazing. Sometimes when you go to change rooms, you're practically sitting on top of each other. But it's great to have that as my home rink, and I'm very happy with where I'm playing and the clubs I'm playing in. And it's almost like, really, I still get excited. It's like a little kid on Christmas each time I see the Olympic symbol outside of it. And I get to just look at that and then look at the ice and be like, I play here. I play on an Olympic rink. And it's even more exciting now to be like, I'm here. I play on an Olympic rink and I'm an Olympian.
Yeah, wear the uniform, as I said. Just don't take it off. Just keep it on there. Did you get a chance to check out many other sports when you were there in Korea as well?
Not really, but we got to watch it on TV and we got to talk to the athletes. I remember on the bus back to the airport when we were going home, we spent the bus ride back with a Norwegian speed skater, I'm pretty sure. And he was awesome and he'd won a medal. So he showed us the medal and everything. And
wow.
It was awesome. We got to not only watch all these different sports, but we also got to meet the athletes too.
Yeah, and see a medal and see all that kind of fun stuff. And you touched on the opening ceremony. Did you get to do the opening, the closing, kind of either of them or both of them?
Got to do the opening ceremony. It was amazing. I was the first Australian to walk out.
Oh, so wow.
That
nice.
Was great. I only got to do that, though, because I was the shortest, so I couldn't have people in front of me. I needed to be seen. I was tiny.
Waving at home, like, there you go, like, hi, fam.
Yeah, I was doing that with my little flag, waving it like crazy. And then once again, I just wish I could relive that moment, walking out and just seeing all these people and being like, these people are here to watch me, to see me. And I still can't fathom just that moment, really.
We really enjoyed that, the opening ceremony too. We've become quite critical of Olympic opening ceremonies in the last sort of, you know, last couple of cycles. But we think the Youth Olympics do it better than sort of the regular Olympics, particularly the last couple of opening ceremonies. So, you know, you were at a good one, I say.
Oh, it was amazing. I actually got really good seating. I was up the front row. I had a little staircase beside me that went down underneath the stage.
Yeah.
And we had people coming up from there right beside me. And it was awesome. Best seat in the house, I've got to say. If you're at the Youth Olympics in Gangwon, Korea, get that spot. You're going to want to.
You're going to want it. Didn't get a chance to sneak in the Thomas Bach selfie when he was kind of getting the selfie up there on the stage.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
No, he loves his selfies, apparently, Thomas. Yeah. One thing I actually wanted to ask you too, we spoke to Remy about sort of her coaching style. And she was talking about getting all of you to have a spirit animal, kind of like an animal that you connected with. What's your animal, Jasmine?
I'm a bunny rabbit.
Ah, bunny rabbit. Nice. Why the bunny? What sort of, what gets you the connected with the bunny rabbit?
Well, I'm small, of course. I'm very jumpy, and I like to think that I'm fast and just I dart between everyone on the ice, and rabbits are a pest, and I like to think that I'm a bit of a pest on the ice. So that worked out.
That's a great explanation. I like that sort of pest nature. How did you find like having Remy as coach? Kind of, you know, how was she during that whole period?
Oh, Remy was awesome. Remy was always, she's always so happy and fun, and she's a brilliant coach, and she explains everything in a way that you can understand it. And if you don't, she's just so friendly. You can go to her. And I almost like to think of her as a bit of a teammate more than a coach.
She's still so young as well. Like, you know, you're still very young, right?
Yeah. She also just took photos with us and would have fun with us and talked about stuff. And we used to have we have a rule. It's called, if Remy didn't take a selfie, it didn't happen. So it was great because each time we had like a photo taken, it would be a very formal photo. We'd just have Remy pop in and be like, selfie time.
Well, I'm telling you, that's a great way of saying that, because did she take a selfie during the Hungary match? Because then that game didn't happen. Hey?
Exactly. You didn't take a selfie.
Doesn't count. Sorry, Hungary. It doesn't count towards your gold medal. Simple as that. That's the rule. It's the rule. You can't break the rule, right? Did you get a selfie with Moon Chow, the mascot? Because I know she did. She sent us a picture of her with the mascot.
I'm pretty sure there's a few photos going around of me with the mascot, because we had lots of mascots walking around the village. And every once in a while, we'd just go up and we couldn't tell if it was the same person from yesterday or if it was a different person, but we were just like, photo.
Why not? There it is. Great thing. And obviously, I believe your mum went too. So, I mean, sort of experiencing that with your family over there, what was that like?
I didn't get to see much of my family, but it was great coming off games, and I'd practically sprint out the door just to see them and to celebrate or grieve with them. And they were awesome when I had my injury. They comforted me. And when we were given the opportunity to go outside the village and really see Korea, they just let me roam wild. It was awesome.
Fantastic. Did you remember who they were after you were concussed though? Did you at least, I think you're my mum.
I remembered them. I didn't forget much, which is probably one of the reasons why I was so adamant that I was okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a positive at least. And at least, you know, hopefully you remember doing this interview one day. Jasmine, I mean, it's been so much fun to be able to hear about your experiences in Korea, and obviously fantastic ones. I love the passion and the mindset there, that it's still on the mind. You fit very well with this show, that we're a group of people who are just obsessed with the Olympics. So we love hearing that. But best of luck with everything moving forward and all that through the career. And we definitely appreciate your time and off the podium today.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a privilege to be here. This was so fun.
And a massive thanks to Jasmine for her time. Such a fun chat to learn about that and just sort of get fresh off the plane, pretty much, to learn a lot about her experiences, which I really do enjoy that, and really fantastic learning everything about her time and everything that came along with that too. So very much appreciate her chatting with us there and going over the details. And I do want to send also a special shout out to the Melbourne Ice for helping us arrange that one, and to Jasmine's mother, Amanda, as well, for helping us arrange that chat with her as well. So a lot of fun there. So thanks to Amanda, to James at the Ice, and everybody else who was able to arrange that chat today. Fantastic chat. And of course, the video version of that available online right now. We're taking a bit of a break from our athlete interviews next week. We're straight back in to our opening ceremony review series. We're going back to Munich, 1972. It is the oldest opening ceremony that we can find online that we can watch that isn't just like a 2-minute highlights package of like Antwerp, which would be fun to do, but there's not really much we can review off a 2-minute highlight package. So we're going to do our best to review the Munich 1972 opening ceremony. And I'm weirdly excited about it, because it's an opening ceremony I have never seen anything of. So I'm really pumped to see how a 70s opening ceremony holds up 50 years later, essentially. So stay tuned for that one next week. And then we will be getting back into the athlete interviews over the coming weeks. We're going to go back to the sport of triathlon. We're going back to sport climbing for the first time in about 3 years as well. Going to winter as well, we speak to a dual sport athlete who has competed in both alpine and freestyle skiing. And then we are weeks away, big interview. We've teased on this a couple of times. A man who has history. He's the only ever athlete from his country to win an Olympic medal. And he's the coach of one of the biggest teams you will be watching at Paris in only a few months' time. That's leaving the door open a little bit there. You can take your guesses along the way, but we are so pumped to be able to bring you that interview as well. So plenty to come over the coming weeks and Off the Podium. As always, if you want to stay up to date with everything that we've got going and coming your way, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get podcasts from. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple, we're on all the good places podcasts are available. Social media as well, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. We're on there. Get on board and never miss an episode. And we always would like to hear what you think of the show. As, of course, we always say at the end of every episode, make sure you leave us some feedback, request some things. We're always open to it, so make sure you do that as well. Thanks again to Jasmine for her time. Thanks again for you for listening. As always, a shout-out to Jason Momoa, the Birmingham Bull. You took the words right out of my mouth. Put a sock in it, Mountain. And remember to go left.
When the stars make it true, just like pasta puzzle,
Amore.
When you dance down the street with the club at your feet, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, that's amore,
amore,
that's amore.